Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Roller Roost. I'm your favourite, Raj Baines, and joining me this evening is Seb. How are you, Seb?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
That's fine. I think you're pretty much a permanent fixture now, if not a loan signing with a view to a permanent
move. In the summer. Yeah, well, yeah, I'm part of the WhatsApp chat group now, so I feel kind of permanent, which is, you know, it was quite the way to start 2015.
Exactly. You get to see the entirely professional inner workings of what goes on between me and Jack. Speaking of Jack, unfortunately he's not here. He's got professional matters to be attending to, which sounds entirely strange, given it's Jack. But he does actually have a quite serious job to be attending to, so there's that. If we crack on, though, Seb, just the two of us, and try and refrain from speaking about rugby too much, because we got told off about that last time. Crystal Palace away was our last game. We lost 2-1 after going ahead, which is a similar story to the last time we played Pardew. What did you make of the game?
It was kind of what I expected. I've been, because of the run of form, I've been expecting that game to turn up for a few weeks now. And it just felt like, people have treated the defeat as if it's, like, represents the sky falling in or something, but it's just, we look knackered. And add in sort of like the player shortages we had, and the loss of Mason and Bentlem in midfield, and it just felt kind of inevitable. We never got going, we never got started. We did lead, but we didn't really deserve to lead at the time. We had enough of the ball without everybody doing anything with it, and there was no all the intensity and all the purpose that was there against Chelsea just evaporated. And there's no reason to be overly negative about it. I mean, you factor in where Palace were, and you know they had Pardew coming in with sort of the cliched new manager bounce, and it was just, I don't know, once we conceded that first goal, it did feel kind of inevitable. You knew what was coming, I think.
Yeah. You touched on Bentaleb and Mason were missing. I think the player that had the biggest knock-on effect for was Christian Eriksen, who had quite an afternoon, not a good one, where it's strange to say he's built up a partnership with those two, because they're seen as their own little unit. But the way in which his new role is to drift back and forth between the line of three at the top and the band of two in the middle, he sort of does a dual role, and it's one that he's doing very well, especially in the past few weeks. With there being new personnel there, with there not being that level of understanding, he was getting caught on the ball much more than he was used to. Somebody like Mason, who was so good at receiving the ball off Bentaleb quickly, shuttling the ball forward, transitioning it quickly to Eriksen, and he was able to then get the front foot on the defenders. That urgency wasn't there. There was only the one occasion that we did it where Dembele did play a quick pass into Chadli, was the one where we actually managed to score, which isn't an accident. That's how we've been playing with the other midfielders in there. So I think that was the biggest knock-on effect with him. There was a few times where you obviously saw in the second half, which led to one of their goals, he lost the ball a couple of times, and was one of the main reasons why that goal was conceded. Rather than it just being him who was having a poor day on his own, I think it was, you could almost, you know, point the lines to the players that he was relying on, that they've changed. But another goal for Harry Kane, which is a positive. It was one of those finishes that only a confident striker really scores, because it was completely the other side of the goal. The keeper didn't really move, and is it only Sergio Aguero who scored more goals than him in all competitions this season?
Something like that,
We have to kind of take that with a tiny pinch of salt, given that Aguero's been injured for such a time, but that's not not bad company to be involved with whatsoever. But do you think that that midfield is going to be a problem with Mason injured for a length of time that I'm not entirely sure we've been told yet, and Bentaleb away for a month at the most, I think, at the African Cup of Nations? Do you think that's going to be the biggest problem for the squad and how we deal with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have no problem with the, you know, obviously I'd rather have Mason and Bentaleb in the side, but there's no problem necessarily with the personnel itself. It's just that the three players you can be used to deputise for the absent two, they all share that same habit of not really being common. Like you touched on it before, they're not really comfortable in pushing the ball forward quickly. Their initial instinct is always to go sideways, always to play something high percentage. And like I said, that really restricts Eriksen, affects where he receives the ball. It's also, from a defensive point of view, he's got to get used to a different set of movements behind him, and, you know, there's a whole load of knock-on effects. I still don't feel entirely comfortable labelling Stambouli as one thing or another. So there's always a possibility that, you know, he can become at least capable of playing in a similar way, if maybe not to quite the same standard. But Dembele, Capu seems to have fallen off a cliff. Pellegrino, I mean, you wrote an article actually right at the beginning of the season about his fatigue, and I agreed with you then, but I would have expected him to be playing a little bit more of an involved role by now, and he isn't, which makes me think that he doesn't have a long-term future at the club, so I don't know if he's going to be used. It's a concern. I think beyond that, though, I think that I remember what happened to Southampton last season, and I remember how they started to negatively, how they started to react to sort of the increased physical burden that Pochettino placed on them. And I'm just looking, in a sort of uber negative way, I'm looking for symptoms that we're about to do the same, basically, at the moment. And we spoke a little bit before we started recording about the number of games we've got through January and February and a number of important games in that period. And that, I think, is the biggest threat as well. Because the squad is not very deep, and there aren't many players who we can really afford. We've lost Mason and Bentaleb for a couple of weeks, and there aren't many players elsewhere who we can afford to just drop out of the side without there being a negative result. So all kinds of, there you go. There's your negativity for the week. Everything's a problem. Not just the midfield, it's all of it.
Do you think we should be going into the transfer market and looking for a central midfielder then, in the absence of those two? There's the Rabiot, I think is how you pronounce that. It's probably completely wrong, but the lad from PSG. do you think that's a guy?
I wrote about this, and I look, if he was, I've seen a little bit of him, not enough to consider myself an expert, but I've seen enough to know that he's clearly going to be a very good player. My issue with him is that if it was a 6-month loan with no option to make to make the deal permanent at the end of it, I don't see the point. You're bringing in a player from a foreign league who's never played in this country, who has no experience of English football, who hasn't actually played a lot of football this season at all in France. Therefore you'd have to factor in maybe a month to 2 months of transition. And then by the time that he feels comfortable in this environment, he's ready to go back to France, basically. So that's, if there was an option to complete the deal permanently, great. And if it was a permanent signing, also fantastic. But otherwise, it just feels like it would be doing PSG a favour for the sake of it, which I'm not hugely in favour of.
Do you think that's a symptom of us as Tottenham fans as perhaps being, I'm playing devil's advocate here, perhaps being slightly too proud to take a player from a club like PSG on loan? Because obviously, if you look at it, flip it slightly, it would be like Tom Carroll going on loan to Swansea, them knowing that they don't have an option to buy him. They're essentially doing Tottenham a favour by taking him for that amount of time and allowing him to test his game in the Premier League. And that is what PSG will be looking at us to do with their player. Do you think that we should kind of accept our place in the world.
Well, to a degree, yes, and you're quite right. But I think if I'm no problem necessarily in taking a player for 6 months from a club like PSG, the issue is he's not a developed player. He's a developing player. If PSG said, you know what, you can have Blaise Matuidi for 6 months, I wouldn't be too proud to say no to that, for example. And it's different. It's the kind of like, you know, what if you're going to loan something that can be immediately effective. And if you've got a gap to plug on your side, you need something that can come immediately in, is up to speed, is ready to deal with the Premier League, and you know can do a job for 6 months rather than just for three.
Yeah, I understand it. It's just because everyone has been talking about him in terms of looking to buy him.
We don't know our place, and we are much too. We have ideas about our station. I accept that, but that isn't. I don't think that's a symptom of that.
I don't think that's a terrible outset mentally, to be honest, to feel that way about your club, if I'm being honest, rather than just being comfortable and being a subordinate to other clubs, actually having the strength of character to think about that way of yourself, I think is actually quite a positive for us. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about Crystal Palace was the penalty decisions. There was the one that Stambouli gave away and the one that Harry Kane could have won. The way in which I saw them was, as I watched them live, as I watched them in real time, and I only had one view of them as the referee did, I thought he got both decisions correct. And it was only in retrospect when I saw them slowed down, played from every which way and every angle possible, that they both seemed to have a air of doubts around them. So is that something you'd go along with, or did you think that he got them right regardless?
Yeah, I think so. I the Palace penalty, as soon as I saw Stambouli leave his feet, I thought penalty, because it's, and I got all kinds of abuse for saying this on Twitter, but I've said like, because Tottenham fans were moaning after it and, you know, saying Stambouli cleared it, but which he didn't. And people have to remember, it's not necessarily about the rules and about, you know, whether you take any of the ball. It's what the referee sees at the time. And the fact that Stambouli was putting himself in a position where the referee was able to make a decision like that. And you just, that was reckless. And actually, like you say, the replays made it look a little bit like Joe Ledley dive, but I still think looking at that, you know, Stambouli doesn't get the ball. He puts himself, he leaves his feet too easily, and you can't, if it happens in the other box, we're squealing for a penalty. All of us. The second one, I thought it was a penalty at the time. But the one thing I'll say is that, and I don't think he meant to do this, but when Kane goes, that Kane was brought down and he was tripped, and by the letter of the law, absolutely, it's a penalty. But he kind of Ashley Youngs on his way down, which, if you look at the referee's position there, he's sort of looking at it from behind. Kane's legs sort of splay out in the way that Youngs do whenever he, you know, runs into the box and throws himself over to try and get a penalty. And it although it was a penalty and it was a foul, it had all the symptoms of being a dive. It annoyed me at the time, but I can understand why it wasn't given. The contact was quite minimal and subtle, so it happens. And also, as Keith Hackett said last week, this is one of the worst refereeing groups we've ever seen in this country. And so I think I've grown a little bit of a tolerance to errors now, even when they haven't Spurs, because I just expect them. It's just,
I'd agree with the Kane point about his legs. They did scissor somewhat when he went down.
Actually Young. We're going to make this catch on. That's going to be a verb. To Ashley Young your legs.
I think the only other footballer I know who has a verb named after him is Zlatan. It's actually in the Swedish dictionary, isn't it? To Zlatan.
That's like a Nike creation, isn't it? That's just a horrible marketing. They probably paid their way into the Swedish dictionary.
Oh, bless him. I like his Zlatan.
I like Zlatan. Yeah. Nike destroyed Zlatan's mystique, though. They made him too obvious. Horrible.
Excellent. We've got Burnley in the cup in a replay. The first Burnley game was absolutely terrible in just about every way.
You were the only one who saw that. I mean, because you had your work duties with that.
Exactly. It was shocking. we shouldn't have lost that game. The game, essentially, just to kind of sum it up in 30 seconds, there was a period in the second half where Pochettino made some substitutions, and I'm going to try and remember them off the top of my head, but one of them was to bring Townsend on for one of the central midfielders. I think it might have been Bentaleb. I'm not entirely sure now, but what that left was a midfield of Dembele and Paulinho, and from the very second that they were left alone in midfield, Burnley got the foot back in the game, and we didn't. It was Townsend for Soldado. That's it, because the double knock on effect was the best that we looked attacking wise was when Kane and Soldado had each other to bounce off one another. They actually worked quite well together, and Burnley looked like they were quite susceptible to having two forward men against them, but that they were only allowed to play with each other for about 10 minutes, and then the substitution to bring Townsend on. I don't think it was Townsend's fault whatsoever. I just think it was the rejigging of the shape that created that axis of evil between Paulinho and Dembele that just, from that moment onwards, you could just see it happening where Burnley just suddenly start to get a foot in the game. They bypassed that midfield so many times. Kane was left isolated. He had nothing to go on whatsoever for just about the entire game. He had one chance pretty much in the 90th minute plus added time probably to score, but he fluffed his lines essentially, just give it an air shot where he could have scored quite easily. But other than that, we didn't deserve anything more than the draw. So it'd be interesting to see the type of team we put out tomorrow night. Because
I quite like to, I mean, I didn't see the game, but I can't stand the logic in playing Dembele alongside Paulinho. Axis of evil, that
it should,
is.
It should never happen.
It should never happen, but he's in a situation where he has to find a combination that's going to get us through the next couple of weeks. And like there is no perfect solution to that problem. There's no, you know, I mean, Burnley is the closest thing. That game was as close as it was going to get to a kind of, you know, not a friendly, because it's still an FA Cup game, of course, but like a very winnable game, which you don't necessarily have to play your first 11 in, and you have to be able to trial something like that in a real world situation.
With a team like Burnley, the thing that I think that often troubles sides like that most is when you play almost not a Tim Sherwood brand, but almost a similar type of shape to what he would do, which was, If we were to just put a front three of having Soldado in the middle, but have Townsend on the left and Lennon on the right, and give them width and give them somebody to aim at, and then perhaps play a middle three of Kapu, Dembele and Stambouli, and have one of those sit, or even have a base of Kapu and Stambouli, and allow Dembele to be the one of the three who drifts forward slightly. Right. That would be the I think, just simplifying it, because I think there's a way of overcomplicating it against teams who aren't themselves overcomplicated. So it's kind of like getting into a conversation with somebody who's only ever seen Toy Story and trying to discuss a Werner Herzog documentary with them, and it's just never going to take off. whereas you kind of need to lower yourself to their level and still be better than them. If you kind of get the thing.
Did you ad lib that?
Yeah, I did.
I'm impressed. I am impressed.
I must confess, I looked at my DVD collection as I was saying it to kind of get my thing. So I do admit that I do have both Werner Herzog documentaries.
That was impressive. I like that. I agree with you. I think what also, in terms of the complexity, I think my own philosophy, it sounds really pretentious, but I don't have philosophy. I just have thoughts. It's different. against a side like Burnley, I've noticed that temperament's a really overused word in football. But for a side, against a team like that, the quicker you can move the ball around and the more intelligent your use of possession is, the easier it is to beat them. And that's a really obvious, sounds like an obvious thing to say, but it just means, in terms of your team selection, you've really got to stack the middle of the pitch. It plays into what you said about Sherwood. You stack the middle of the pitch with ball players who can shift the ball around quickly and accurately, and then you put pace out wide, because those are the things that they are. They're a I mean, they're not hugely impressive as a team, but they are improving, and there's a lot to admire about what Sean Dyche has done with that set of players. But individually, they are quite inferior. So what you really want to do is you create situations in which players like a Lennon or a Townsend or a Lamella or a Chadli are isolated one-on-one with a fullback or a centre-back, because that takes away that the sort of the strength in numbers thing that a team like that has to rely on. So we don't necessarily have the players to do that at the moment, but that's kind of what I think the objective should be, which isn't a million miles away from what you're saying, I don't think.
You often get with a team like Burnley when they come into the league, out of the three that get promoted, you often get one who kind of brands themselves as the little train that could, and through sheer effort, they try and keep themselves in the league. And that's essentially how Wigan stayed in the league for so long before Martinez got involved. But sometimes it just doesn't work. They fall flat on their face. So it's going to be interesting for them in the league, because I think it's about seven games now on the trot that Sean Dyche has essentially used pretty much the same 11 every time, with the same substitutions at similar times throughout those games. So it's essentially like he's kind of set up that side on autopilot and just kind of lets them get on with it. And that familiarity is what is giving them their run at the moment. But it's going to have to come to an end at some point, because there's no way that you can play that same team.
So that's a proper bad advert that just came up in the middle of that.
That's fine. I think you'll endear yourself to our listeners.
Oh, mate, I was trying to look up Burnley's appearance statistics on who scored, and it seems that who scored have suddenly have really antisocially implemented pop-up ads. So there's a little caveat for everybody who's listening.
Excellent.
Sorry, mate. You go on.
That's fine.
I was listening to you. As soon as you
said you were doing other things, I was speaking. It just takes me back to Jack on the last season when we first started this. There was a period of about a month where we recorded pretty much as soon as both him and I got in from wherever we'd been that day. And so about halfway through the recording, usually when we were speaking to a guest, he'd send me a text to say he'd gone for a shit, and then he'd just like keep it going until I get back. And because I had like his stream in my ears, I could hear like him going to the toilet and the toilet flushing.
No, you're taking two people too far behind the tail.
And then he'd come back, and then he'd like kind of reassert himself into the show as if nothing had ever happened, and then all of that would be edited out. But that's
ultimate professionalism, though, isn't it? Really, from him, that's to be admired.
Well, you classed up the show when you arrived. I think we a man called Sebastian. Even if you are named after a cartoon crab, you are classier than the rest of us.
Burnley work hard then.
I'm sure that's probably one you got at school, wasn't it, Sebastian from Little Mermaid?
No, I don't get that very often.
No, people don't just come up to you and sing Under the Sea.
No, not random people that I don't know. No, that doesn't happen. which we're all grateful for. If I'm honest, I could, you know, no.
That's a shame. I always manage.
I don't think it is.
I'm just keeping up my weekly habit of offending one member of your family per week. So,
that's my mother again. That's not one member of my family. It's the same member of my family again and again, consecutive weeks.
I can only apologise again for last week, and I wish we can leave it in the past, and I do appreciate you listening. But what have we got moving on seriously? This weekend coming up, we've got Sunderland at home, 3 p.m. on a Saturday. Don't happen very often. They are terrible.
They are dreadful.
Last season, I think we beat them quite heavily at home, playing that Tim Sherwood football that we were talking about, pretty much just a route one simple attacking football is something that they couldn't handle.
Throw out all the tactics, simplify it, just tell them to run around a little bit. It's Tim Sherwood football.
I think this is one that Sunderland have pretty much resigned themselves to losing over the past few seasons. They've never really performed at White Hart Lane. This is definitely me setting us up for a fall here, but I can't remember a good Sunderland performance at White Hart Lane for quite some time.
They beat us in the last Redknapp season in the Kieran Richardson scoring. I can't remember which year that was in, because it happened right in front of me. I was still going to games then. We lost that game.
It does ring a bell. I mean, last season there was the Lee Catamol goal where he had an open goal essentially to pass it into from about 40 yards. From what you know of Sunderland,
that's one of their, like, if Lee Catamol scores against you, you should, you know when you're playing pool and you pop the black ball out of sequence and you just lose. That's what a Lee Catamol goal should do to a game of football. It should just be over. Like, it's like when Colin Cole scores against you. Like, you just, everyone leaves the pitch. You just go, all right, fine.
It was like that time that Maiga scored against us last season, and we've just had to admit that it just wasn't happening for us. But as I was going to say, from what you know about Sunderland, is there anything that we should be worried about at all? Connor Wickham, is he going to...
No, I wouldn't worry about that. In theory, there are players... He's going to score, isn't he? Yeah. there are players that you'd worry about in theory. Like, you know, Adam Johnson has 3 good games a year, after which everyone says he should be playing for England, when, in fact, obviously he shouldn't be. My worry with them is they are set up to be to restrict, even at home. The problem Sunderland have is, okay, they've got issues in their defence, but their structure is really lopsided. So they have, obviously, their back four, their protected midfield players, and a huge chasm between that part of the team and Connor Wickham up front by himself. Because, the two wide players who, on Saturday, I think, were Jaccarini and Johnson, are basically just the wide players in midfield five rather than wide forwards in a front three. So what I expect they'll do at White Hart Lane is they'll come and sit behind the ball, leave Wickham up front, and just try and clog up all the areas in their own half and make it as hard as possible for us. And that's a little bit of a red flag, because traditionally we struggle when people do that. And given the way our side is at the moment, given the issue in midfield with the speed of transition of getting the ball out of midfield and into attacking zones, that worries me a little bit. And I'm getting WhatsApped by Jack saying he's ready to jump in.
Should we try and do him in? This is live.
This is a test of your professionalism right now.
See if we can somehow part him in as we talk.
Raj spends all week talking about how many different Apple devices he owns and how, so let's see how technologically advanced he is.
Wait, it's loading. Are we going to hear the dulcet tones of Jack Hussey? Are you there?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Look at this. Live in the middle of the recording. Welcome to the show, Jack.
We're actually live. Wow. Are you recording my part then, Raj?
Of course we are. Yeah, you're in there, mate.
Ah, that's good. I'm happy. I'm prepared, but I did have, as I said on WhatsApp, FOMO. That's, I was just sat there seeing you guys WhatsApping away, and I thought, I want a piece of this. I don't want to miss out for the sake of work. I'm sure I'm going to add something great to the podcast.
Well, just to catch you up on our mid show production meeting, we've talked about Crystal Palace. Did you have anything to add about that?
I didn't like losing. I liked Harry Kane scoring a goal. And we missed Mason and Benteleb. There you go.
Yeah, I'll tell you what,
lads. I'm not afraid to say either that we missed Mason and Benteleb. I know people don't like talking about that, but I'm not afraid to put my neck out on the line and say, I don't think Dembele's up to it anymore.
I saw that last night, mate. Who was it? He said, I know we can't really say names on here. That's for the WhatsApp.
It was just some random that responded to Windy. No, it wasn't. It wasn't one of like Raj's football Twitter mates or anything like that.
Oh, fuck off. You two just bully me. I'm not happy about this. Also, we spoke about, what did we speak about after that? Burnley in the Cup tomorrow night. Do you have any worries about playing Burnley in the FA Cup, Jack?
I don't have any worries, which is probably wrong, wouldn't you say, as a Spurs fan? But I think we'll turn them over.
We should probably talk about Danny Ings. We've been.
Is he the lad that scored that good goal?
Yeah, he is. We've been
absolute cracker. That one was
that was great. Yeah, lovely.
Still Ashley Barnes. we've been linked to him quite heavily because he's only young and he's played with Harry Kane in the under-21s. Taken out of context, he played with Harry Kane could be quite salacious, but I mean on the field. Is that a transfer that interests either one of you?
The thing is, and I'm gonna plug my own work here. There's a little bit of an article I did for Squawker a couple of days ago on this topic, and I think the way to look at Danny Ings is not necessarily whether we want him now, but whether it's realistic to expect Burnley to sell him now, and also whether it's really worth, given what we know about the club's finances, whether it's worth paying £7 or 8 million for someone that is going to be available for free in 5 months. So it's really a question. So that's not a good answer, but it's a kind of a question for the summer.
What about you, Jack?
Do you actually think it would cost us about £7-8 million, Seb, at this point?
I think Burnley will hold out for that, because I think Burnley's mentality will be, we don't want to sell, but if someone's silly enough to pay enough money for him, then we will do. So I'd imagine that at the very least they set an asking price of somewhere around that, and if no one meets it, they'll say, okay, well, we'll keep him inside and hope he keeps us up. And then at that point, next season's TV revenue makes losing him for free, you know, not a big deal anymore. So I don't expect you to pay that.
No, we wouldn't at all, would we? I like Ings as a concept.
But,
as an abstract thought, Ings is appealing. However, but apparently he can play across the front three, can't he? He can play in those kind of advanced winger roles outside of the box. Can he cutting in from the left or from the right?
Through the middle, forward. I'll take your word for it.
I believe he's played off the left in a similar Jay Rodriguez manner.
Jay Rodriguez, yeah.
Yeah. So
who's apparently been linked to City for £20 million now as well? Don't know if you've seen that.
It's January. The papers have just got their transfer tombola out at the minute. So one of them sits at one end of the office with a name. The other one's got a club, and the third one's got a price. And then they do it in turn and see whatever drops out.
At the risk of getting us sued, did we all see the Messi Man United story last night?
Yeah, I saw it, but I avoided it.
That was a terrific piece of work.
This has passed me by.
I'll tell you what, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. Just have a little read on the Guardian's website. It's a lot of fun. Stimulating stuff.
I was quite disappointed that it was the Guardian that posted that rather than one of the tabloids. I thought the Guardian website would continue to be a safe haven. I mean,
they're above that kind of thing.
There's the odd time where they'll just do one of those stories that is just a gif, where I'll kind of go, I'll give you this one because you've still got to pay your light bills. But I'm not a fan of the Messi story. And then Jack, we were speaking about Sunderland at home this weekend, in which me and Seb essentially just said that we've got to beat them by dumbing down and being as simple as possible. Would you agree? Is there anything about Sunderland that worries you? Do you think we should be winning that? We have to be winning that?
Well, they just lost to Liverpool, didn't they? At home. Yeah. I think they lost that game, didn't they?
Yeah. They did.
Yeah. I don't know. They always strike me as one of those teams that can upset Spurs, you know? That's most teams, really.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We can upset Spurs, but they're, I don't know, they're always capable of getting a result. Like with a manager like Gus Poyet that seems to, you know, he has that kind of like heart on sleeve, like come on, take it to the pitch, lads type mentality that you kind of associate with managers like Harry Redknapp, but it's more the, I don't know, the fiery Latin equivalent of that.
Not stereotypical at all, that one.
I'm allowed to do that, mate. That's what I'm saying.
So, you have to respect what he got them out of last season and the grounds at which he took points last year. I mean, you know, the guy, Sunderland are as bad a team as they're in the division at the moment, but there's, you know, there's something, he knows how to get something out of this group of players. So that's, talking away into a defeat, aren't we, really?
I guess, yeah. But do you think they have like a clear kind of style? Because I wouldn't ever look at like a Poyet team and say like, there's a definite style, there's a definite approach to football that he has, really?
Other than negative, I'd agree. I don't think, no, there's nothing. They seem like they seem to be in a permanent state of flux at the moment. So no, I agree. I don't see any. I don't see what they're working towards. At least,
I think they've got an idea, but they've not translated that idea at all well, ever.
Well, I think he needs new players to implement that idea. I think some of that. I watched that Liverpool game, and I was amazed at, you know, you're at home against one of the clubs that almost every fan in the country wants to beat. You're in trouble. You need some points. And that's what they gave. It was just limp. They just rolled over for Liverpool. If it had been 4-0 at half time, Sunderland couldn't have complained. It was just there was nothing about them which thought, okay, wish, you know, you get those teams that are obviously short on quality, but they are, you know, they work hard enough in front of their own supporters to get results. Sunderland weren't even that on Saturday. They were that was as bad a home performance as I've seen this year. They were just. There was nothing in midfield. There was no threat going forward, and their back four was just littered with errors. And just there's no collective anything to anything they did. And so they're going to beat us up. I've ratted against them, but I don't know. I don't see whatever it is that he's trying to do there. I don't see what it is.
Do you think somebody at Sunderland's kind of sold their soul in order to win the derby every year and beat Man City and stay in the league? Those three things are what they're going to have every season.
Could you imagine us like being as shit as Sunderland, but comprehensively smashing Arsenal like every they do to Newcastle every single season? Like, because they've smashed Newcastle like 3-0 on several occasions, haven't they now?
At St James's Park as well. And they've had, you know, not only that, not only have they beaten them well, but they've beaten them in great circumstances. You imagine going to the Emirates. I mean, we've almost done this, but going to the Emirates and scoring in, win the last 90 seconds of stoppage time like they did Johnson's goal a few weeks ago. It's just be great. And it's kind of an ethical question, though, is it? Would you take sort of flatlining in the league, but staying up and trade that off against doing that to Arsenal every year? It's a harder question than it seems, I think. Anyway,
it is. I definitely know what you're saying. There's that whole kind of like that small club mentality. But I think, well, you know, it's like you've often said, Seb, sometimes you just need to. This is completely out of context on what you said. I'm going to be honest. I'm completely paraphrasing.
You take my words right out of context.
where you were saying that Luis Suarez. No. He did. Seb didn't go there. Don't worry. It was your article when you were saying it, like, a lot of the time. We are kind of focusing too much on, you know, just the kind of the noise around football and not just enjoying victories in itself. So I know there is that kind of like small club type trope that gets used, but it's...
You've got to enjoy it, though. I Raj and I were talked about the Palace defeat before you jumped on, and one of the things I saw...
Rudely interrupted.
talk about Ashley Barnes. and one of the things I saw on social media, which I couldn't believe, was people who were going, oh, this, you know, Chelsea might as well never have happened now. And you just think, what do you, what do you get out of the game if you think like that? If you can't enjoy putting five past the Mourinho side at White Hart Lane, and then it's just, I don't know, maybe it's me that's out of sync with the way football thinks now, but I just don't understand that as a mentality. I don't get how you can judge everything that happens in a season based on what happens at the end of it. And
I think that's it. It's how you're asking me how I felt about the Palace game. I think overall, it's beating Chelsea the week before. Kind of, you know, it's not that I don't care that Tottenham lost or anything like that, but it really did soften it. And it's kind of, I think the guys on the Fighting Cock said, you know, if losing to Crystal Palace every season meant beating Chelsea in the way that we did, I'd take that.
Oh, you know? Me too, man. Absolutely. If that's the penance, we could lose three straight and I'd still take that Chelsea game over. That's what being a fan is. You know, there's moments of it. It's not just like celebrating a win, but you just remember how proud you felt after that game. You just thought, yeah, all right, we can play. And look on Mourinho's face and Terry and Fabregas and all of the bastards.
My profession, if you want to call it that, is, you know, dealing in kind of nonsensical hyperbole, and I just think, you know, some things are bigger than 3 points, aren't they? You know, that's it. It's bigger than 3 points. There's more to it than that. It's it's about heart. It's about pride. And
you need to get out of the office. So,
I know. Hey, mate.
You're talking in poster quotes.
Yeah. That did not scream professional pride. That
if you're listening, Mike,
I love my job.
Yeah,
I can't do without it. Good bills to pay.
I'm a wage slave. No, I mean,
I'm just playing off the podcast.
I'm fulfilled. I'm just with the lads. It was just banter.
You missed the best banter before. I made a joke about Seb being named after the crab from Little Mermaid. Oh. See, this is why I need you on. You're the only one who laughs at my pathetic jokes.
I got offended. It was awkward.
Was it all okay? It's got to be awkward again now since you brought it up again, Raj.
Because I mentioned his mum again, and I've done it again now second time.
Why have you done that?
Oh, but
you referenced my mother in the title of last week's podcast. I had to explain to her. You know, she listens to it, and you, she clicked, and I just thought, oh, weird. You're lucky she doesn't understand much. You're very fortunate.
I was half tempted when I called it that last week to just kind of start it, but like put some slap bass down and just kind of do a talking intro where I just talk directly to your mother, but I thought it'd be completely inappropriate. So
I've been a real rift in the family there.
It's just,
we're all grateful that you resisted that temptation.
You know, like just kind of did a. Have you ever heard when William Shatner covers a song and he does like a spoken word?
Does a spoken word thing, yeah.
I would have done that with something like Sexual Healing or something.
Oh, God.
Just with like a really bad karaoke instrumental in the background, which I'm sure if you're imagining that at home, that's quite arousing. So you can use that one if anyone's in the market for that, then give it a shout.
What strange little alleyway in your mind have you wandered down? Right? So I'm going to be honest, like this has really gone off on one.
You heard Jack and I just going quiet there, right? And there's no more interaction.
Do you not think that my voice is a natural
aphrodisiac?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know,
do you not just like
there's a time and a place for this?
To use the type of lingo that I imagine Seb does when he's with his lads. Well, like you and your lass are doing some rumpy pumpy,
I don't understand a word of that sentence. No word.
It's because I went half Yorkshire and half posh with like your lass and then rumpy pumpy afterwards. But anyway.
I think slap and tickle is a bit more posh than rumpy pumpy, isn't it?
I'm not posh enough to know.
Slap and tickle belongs in like an even war novel.
It's the sort of thing they're saying sharp, isn't it? Like in those kind of like period imperialistic type pieces.
Yeah. Do you remember that? It just reminded me now. Do you remember that? I can't remember what it was called, but when Sean Bean was in that romantic one where he was with that woman in the woods quite early on in his career. What was it called? I can't remember what it was, but it was like an erotic novel, but it was for TV, and it had Sean Bean speaking in a Sheffield accent throughout it, just trying to seduce this woman. It's quite infamous. I can't remember what it's called. I'll find it.
I love Sean Bean. So do I. I'm gonna throw that in now. I absolutely love him. I've been trying to get with old Luke the Boiler. Shout out to Luke the Boiler. Good lad on
I think he sent us a question for later.
I'm trying to get hashtag Daily Bean trending with him, where I just send, essentially, I just plague him with pictures of Sean Bean every day, which he kind of humours me with, but probably he's like, I don't know why he keeps sending me pictures of Sean Bean in his pants, but it's just how I roll. Yeah. He probably is judging me, and many people do, but I can deal with that. So if I was worried about people judging me, I probably wouldn't leave my house, because there's plenty to. Oh, God, have I had a breakdown on there? Anyway,
we've got the first.
You had a bit of a breakdown on Twitter yesterday when you related the in quite a depth as well the dream that you had about Windy. that was surreal. I was watching that unfold and just thinking he's broken.
It was only when I got halfway through this I was suddenly like, oh shit, I'm plaguing people's timelines
this is in
here.
Public. If you haven't seen this, you want to go to Jack's timeline and revisit that before you can delete it. That was
my question. It was a salient point, though. If you follow Windy, eventually it was. No, if it's anti American agenda, because you know they are like the victimized people of this world.
Oh, that's what it was. I found it now. Sean Bean were in Lady Chatterley's Lover, which is the one I was thinking of, where everyone's right posh and it's a period drama, and then Sean Bean turns up and is doing his slop and tickle in his one voice, yeah. So if you've never heard of Lady Chatterley's Lover, then do find it on YouTube. But we've kind of fallen off as soon as Jack.
I can't remember the name of it. He was in a really good BBC drama with Stephen Graham as well. Where he played the part of a transvestite, and Stephen Graham was like married with kids and stuff, and had an affair with a transvestite, Sean Bean. It was absolutely brilliant. It was really,
really
good.
One of your dreams.
No, Sean Bean was exceptional. I'll try and find the name of it.
Is this just going to be Sean Bean's IMDb? Is that what this?
That's what I'm doing now. Exactly that.
I've already been.
I'm going to Stephen Graham's. I'm approaching it from an alternate angle.
Anyway, Seb, we'll try and write this. Jack's obviously just torn us off. We were doing quite well to talk about only football until he decided that he was going to invade our conversation.
But what I was going to say about Sunderland, Sessegnon, he destroyed us last time, didn't he?
He is also at West Brom though now.
so I fancy our chances against him on Saturday.
That's all I had to add. Don't worry, guys. You take
it. It was the excitement about his Sunderland plan as he dived into it.
And now it's like, oh, yeah, it's something I can say.
I've got something.
I think he's actually been at West Brom for like 3 seasons, hasn't he?
He's been there for a while, yeah.
I remember a game in which he hurt us.
We've really got to watch out for Kevin Phillips as well, because he's on some real top form.
In line for the Golden Boot, I think.
Anyway, our first question, if we can try and get this out, Jesus. Elliot Graham on Twitter says, do you think we can expect to see any use of Eric Dier during the season, or is he our next Corker? Seb?
Hard to say. I don't really want to see Eric Dier right back again. I didn't enjoy that beyond West Ham away. And also, I'm a big fan of keeping Vertonghen and Fazio together as much as possible. Because centre-back's one of the areas in which you don't really need to rotate that much. I think Dier's a good player, and I think Dier will be a good player for a few years to come. But I just, I don't really see the need for him without, you know, a proper defensive injury crisis at the moment. I think we'll see him occasionally, but I don't think he'll be a prominent part.
If I just take a quick cut into the questions, I found this article online. Sean Bean takes on trans role for BBC drama. The BBC has announced Sean Bean will play a transgender character in the episode of its legal drama Accused. So there you go, Jack.
What kind of Google search did you use to get that one then?
Sean Bean trans. from Ben Lewis 0795, which is how my mum's... Is it my mum's? No, that's how my mobile number starts. Anyway, is Stambouli really any better than Poligno?
I don't think we know yet. I don't like comparing the two because I don't see a lot of similarities between them. First, I don't really know my knowledge of Stambouli prior to his Tottenham career came purely from following Philippa Booth on Twitter. He's one of French Football Weekly's writers, and she's great. She's also a Montpellier fan, and she used to rave about him. But I just still don't feel like I've got a proper handle on who he is in England yet. And Poligno, I don't know. I was one of those people that thought when he came to the club he was going to be a revelation, and I don't really understand what's happened to him.
If you bear in mind that
it's kind of surprised everyone, hasn't it, Poligno?
I think so. I remember reading Tim Vickery, whose opinion about South American players I would always trust, of course. And he compared him to Frank Lampard. I remember thinking, just being very excited about that. And he has never shown himself to be anything like Frank Lampard since getting here.
Who is it that took it that one step further that just had to add in, he's a black Frank Lampard?
I don't know who said that.
Might have actually been Martin Samuel. It wouldn't surprise me if it was as well. But yeah, someone decided they had to preface it with the fact he was black as well.
If we move on, we had... Oh, it's your mate, Luke the Boiler. He said... Oh, it's a jokey one. He goes, also, no mention for Norton in the Ballon d'Or. Sadly overlooked again. Thoughts? Do you think he's going to stay at the club in January? Or he's been linked to Leicester quite heavily for, £3 or £4 million? Do you think that's a sale worth making?
Yeah, they can absolutely have him for £3 or £4 million. I mean, with all due respect and everything, but yeah, he's not ever going to be anything more than the guy that no one wants to see on the team sheet, unfortunately. But, I mean, he's a serviceable Premier League player, but if someone offers you £3 or £4 million for a player in his mid-20s, who is never going to get better than improving his current level, and when you've already got backup and Dyer, you take it, surely.
Jack?
I don't know. See, I'm not... I think Norton's kind of been given quite a bit of... He's been tarnished by playing at left-back quite a few times. He's not actually a natural left-back.
I don't think he's a natural footballer most of the time.
I think when he stepped in at right back, I don't know. I'm more convinced by Norton's performances at right back than I am Kirakesh's when he plays there. I'm really not that fond of Kirakesh, if I'm totally honest. I don't know. I quite like having him as an option, but I guess we're trying to see the emergence of players like Yedlin, probably not yet, but in a while he's going to be in there. The back of Pochettino's mind, as is Kyle Walker-Peters, who's...
I don't think we're going to see Yedlin in the first team this season. I think he's under 21s. Under 21s for the rest of the year, I'd imagine, especially given the way he's been brought into the club. He seems like he's sort of been settled into the 21s as quickly as possible, and he's not even in little things like the training photos and stuff, he's not featuring too prominently as they would a new signing with the first team. I think they're being very careful with him because he is very raw. You mentioned Kirakesh, though. I've, as you well know, I've got quite a soft spot for Kirakesh because I think on his day, when he's at the top of his form, he's quite a dynamic centre-back. We've not seen that for a while, though. He's not one that I would sell, although given the summer and now, Roma are obviously very keen. Is that somebody that you would cash in on as well, or do you see a time for him at the club?
I'd personally cash in on Kirakesh.
See, I'm different. I expect Kabul will be off, and then if he goes, there's not an awful lot of cover at centre back anymore. And the thing is, Kirakesh is not a right back. He never will be. He's a centre back. And I remember when he first came to the club, he was he looked a really elegant footballer. He looked a very competent defender. We went that period of games where, with him starting, where we didn't concede. And I accept that his confidence has fallen through the floor, but I think there's still a good player there. I have more faith in him staying around and potentially recovering some kind of form than I do with Kabul, who I think is broken forever.
I would agree with that. I think Kabul, I'd get rid of Kabul over Kirikesh any day. If Besiktas are wanting to give us money to take him, then they can quite happily take him, because then I think that ushers in Hugo Lloris to be permanent captain, and that can only be a good thing. What were you going to say, Jack? Sorry?
I was just going to say a bit of a Harry Redknappism, but I think what's always plagued me about Kirikesh, even in the early days, which, you know, as you rightly say, he did look kind of more assured and more elegant a footballer, but he's always looked woeful in the air. And I think for a centre-back, especially in a very kind of physically dominated league like the Premier League.
He's quite frail, isn't he, actually? He's quite wiry as a physically.
I mean, that's what's always bothered me about him, given that centre-back is his kind of key position. So I don't think it's particularly that he's like a terrible footballer or anything like that. I'm just not sure how well suited he is to the Premiership, if I'm totally honest. But I don't know.
He's sort of our version of Nastasic, isn't he? That he's a young,
a little bit,
Eastern European centre-back that's had that good start and then seems for some reason, one or another, to have dropped off. But I would hope we were to persevere with him, to be honest. Seb, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say that if you compare him with Fazio, right, that Jack's point about his size and what he's like in the air is really pertinent, and that is the one asterisk against him. Because apart from the goal, my favourite moment from Saturday was Fraser Campbell, I think, trying to stamp on Lloris.
Yeah.
Fazio just coming in having absolutely none of it. Which I loved. I love seeing. If he didn't be given a red card for that, I'd have been happy. I just thought, I want players to behave like that. You start trying to stamp on our goalkeeper. I want some brute of a centre half to come and basically chest bump you back into your own supporters, which I loved. Thought it was great.
It reminded me of.
Kirikesh would never do that because Kirikesh doesn't have the presence. And Fazio's a guy that, you know, that there aren't many forwards in this division who are going to fancy. Yeah, he's got a little bit of menace to him, which I like. Leaves an elbow on someone occasionally.
It reminded me of something that me and Jack often reference, which is that time where somebody like booted Danny Rose, and out of nowhere, Aaron Lennon just turned up and started starting a fight, and it was just like it was amazing because it was kind of like you're starting on my mate.
Yeah. And I think the ref immediately gave him the yellow card, and he just walked off like, yeah. You know, like with his little like bulldog strut that he does. I mean, that was in the Europa League, wasn't it, Raj?
I can't remember. I love Aaron Lennon.
Yeah. Do you reckon he's going to come back into the team at all? Because he seems to be part of this little cabal that's fallen out with Pochettino. I was about to say AVB then. Same difference. Pochettino.
I have a friend who, this is going to sound really in the know when I was like, Twitter accounts, and I'm really sorry for how it sounds, but it's honestly the truth. A guy I used to play football with, he knew a few people, knew a few of the Tottenham coaching staff from a few years ago. And I don't know, this might be libelous, I'm not sure, but they used to say that Aaron Lennon is the most stupid player they'd ever coached. And I've always thought after that, like, I remember hearing that. And then from that point on, I've always sort of matched it up with the things that I've seen. And if you look at his failure to learn any other part of the game beyond running a defender, taking him on, going to the byline and squaring it, you kind of think, yeah, that makes sense.
He's defensively very astute, though.
He works hard, yeah, and he takes up good positions. But if you think about how long it's taken... for him to develop anything beyond that single thing that he used to do. And then you hear things like that about his level of intelligence. I don't know.
He's definitely not the sharpest tool in the box.
It's similar to, in a similar way as well, Seb, a mate of mine who used to know people, blah, 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 that worked in around Chelsea. And they said a very similar thing about Joe Cole in that he was... like naturally one of the most gifted English footballers they'd ever seen play there. And this was the likes of like Mourinho and things were saying that, but he was just so unbelievably stupid he couldn't be coached at all. Like, there was no way to give him any kind of clear tactical advice or anything like that, because he just didn't get it and he couldn't absorb it.
I remember I have a Joe Cole anecdote, for what it's worth. I used to live quite near to him a few years ago, and there's a restaurant in that part of London called Mile Dutch. I went wandering in there with the girl that I was seeing at the time, and Joe Cole was sitting in the corner reading the Telegraph, which is just...
Was he looking at the pictures, Jim?
No, was it upside down?
No, he was sitting in the corner by himself, pair of glasses on, reading the Telegraph. It was extraordinary. By all accounts, Joe Cole was a very, very nice person, so I mean no offence at all. But it was just a shocking. It's just not what I expected. That's all.
I once saw Damien Duff in.
That's the, a shit.
I saw him in a pub in Esher, and he was with an old Irish guy who I'm assuming was his dad. And we said, "All right, Damien," and the old Irish guy just said, "Fuck off" to us. So there you go. That's my Damien Duff story.
I saw
Damien Duff just sat there quietly and awkwardly.
I saw Nicky Butt at Heaton Park seeing the Stone Roses with my old man. Anyway, if we go on to our last question.
Was Nicky Butt mashed up at all?
No, it was beforehand. I imagine so.
You're watching the Stone Roses?
Yeah, that place was essentially just one big cloud of ganja by the time it started. I got food poisoning off a kebab and spent half that gig throwing up, which weren't good, but that's a different story.
Was it a double-ended affair, or was it just the single?
No, just like chundering. It weren't great. But our last question, I think this is specifically for you, Jack, before we wrap up.
Why is Jack a wanker or something?
No, it's from at
some proper banter
Jim,
like that,
Jim
yeah.
at Stylish Riot. If you can compare Sam Burgess to a Spurs legend, who would it be and why?
I would have to go. I don't even know. Danny Ings, there you go.
Do you know who Sam Burgess is, Jack?
He's the fella that punched the bloke on the floor, isn't he?
No.
No, I know. That's Flower.
That's Flower, yeah.
I know. I'm just being a knob. Yeah. I don't know who Sam Burgess is, though.
Sam Burgess is used to be in England, Bradford, South Sydney Rabbit O's. Rugby league player, absolutely fantastic lad, only from up the road to me in Dewsbury, and he's gone and played Union now, which you have to
I know about this lad,
you have to kind of forgive him for that. I mean, it's an error of judgment, but you've got to back him in his error of ways. But he's now playing for the club that Seb supports in Bath, or Bath as Seb would probably tell me.
Damn hell.
Yeah, Bath. Ends with an F, by the way. And he's doing right well there. He's just got his first try. Quite good. Managed to crawl his way over the line. But what would be your answer to that question, Seb?
It's a hard one, because it's just, there's no... I saw that on Twitter before we started recording, and I wanted to say Dave McKay. I don't really know why. I just thought he's what I associate with success. And that's why, that's what radiates from Burgess. He's just a winner. There's no sort of physical comparison between football and rugby, so you can't really do it that way. But just someone that symbolises something,
Success. I'd go along with that, yeah.
I think that's the only one I can really come up with. I don't know if it fits particularly well, but I'm not old enough to have ever watched McKay.
No, I don't think any of us are, but yeah, from what I've heard of Dave McKay's stature and kind of what he inspired those around him to do, reminds me a lot of Sam Burgess in the way in which he conducts himself. I mean, this weekend there was that period of about 30 seconds where that one poor lad on the other team just got smashed twice, clean off his feet. It was quite a beautiful sight. But
I missed this week's game, but my brother was telling me about it, and he was just physically dominant all the way through it, which is great. Yeah, I guess.
Excellent. I forgot your name then, Jack. Jack, if you want to wrap up, please, and do your usual wrapping up.
I was going to say, I'm glad I've dragged this episode into the gutter, into at least just kind of some sense of, disrepute. Just kind of come and blurged out
We were heading for a solid under the hour.
It was quite serious, though. We were quite into our... Before Jack turned up, it was a bit... I don't know, we were quite analytically.
Yeah, and before you know it, we're talking about Sean being in drag, so...
Yeah.
That's the effect you have on us, Jack.
It's just what I bring to the table, you know.
Force into the third dimension. It was lovely.
Turn it up to level 11. Yeah. If you want to listen to any previous episodes of Rule the Roost podcast, I nearly said the Fighting Cock then, Jesus. Rule the Roost podcast, you can do so at spursstatman.com or on iTunes. We've also got a, what is it, Buzzsprout it's called, isn't it,
yeah. Raj?
But it all links through to Spursstatman. Just go to spursstatman.com, listen to all the previous episodes there. There's a nice like web player that you can scroll through.
This isn't your usual end of... When I asked for the usual...
Mate, I'm freestyling, yeah? I'm trying to mix it up. I'm keeping it fresh.
I was enjoying it too. It was fresh. Exactly.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? That's it. I'm like a... I'm like... What's his name? Shut up, Jack. Just finish it. You can also read lots of other brilliant and... well-written pieces of Tottenham editorial on the Spurs Stat Man website, which I'm sure Raj won't actually know what's going on this week, aside for usual, as he says.
Usual.
So, yeah, listen up for that.
How can they listen to written words?
You can read it. Well, I don't know. They might have assisted some kind of thing. Accessibility settings on their iPhones. You know?
That's essentially what I used at the end of last year when I did that. The Jingle Bells. We never spoke about Jingle Bells, Jack. How did you feel about that?
I really I actually did break into hysterics at that one. Did like it a lot. It was very peculiar.
Did you hear that, Seb?
I didn't.
Oh, Seb, you've got to listen all the way through.
Okay.
It was the very last podcast we did before Christmas, right after the show or after the end music, I essentially wrote a Jingle Bells type poem about Jack and the show. I think you may have featured in it, Seb. I can't remember. I'm fairly sure you did. And it was just essentially a piss take. But then what I did was, instead of me reading it, I just put it through my Mac's speech to voice.
Thing.
Yeah, so it sounded like Stephen Hawking reading a poem, which made it funnier. But anyway, I've ruined Jack's ending. Jack, how do you know you end it?
Yeah, follow the Spurs Statman at Spurs Statman. And yeah, follow us at RTRSSM. We're going to lose to Sunderland. No, we're not. Yes, we are. Come on, you Spurs.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.